This episode of Film Frenzy includes spoilers for most of the Star Wars franchise, but especially the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian. Consider this your spoiler warning.
Hi, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Tom, and it's another episode of Film Frenzy Friday.
So this week we are going to be talking about Empire Strikes Back. Came out in 1980, directed by Irving Kirshner, with a runtime of 2 hours and 7 minutes. You know, sci-fi adventure, starring Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher. This feels redundant.
I feel like most of the people that are listening should know Star Wars, but if you don't, this is just a little recap for you.
Right. So we're starting on the second episode of the original trilogy, episode 5. You know, we talked a little bit about, this last week, how it's a great jumping off point for us. You know, it's a movie that most people know. Everybody knows the twist at this point. It takes place in a great place in the story. It's kind of in the middle where you don't really need the context of the other two movies. I mean, I feel personally you can just kind of watch it by itself. But we just had the 40th anniversary in December.
Well, I mean, I'd like to just add that I was actually alive when this movie came out, because, you know, 1980. But I can remember the situation of how I became a fan of this movie.
Right.
When I was, I don't even know, very young, like 4 or 5 years old, I watched episode 4 all the time, never even realizing that there were any other Star Wars movies. It wasn't until I took a trip to my neighbor's house, when we lived in California, that they were watching an episode of Star Wars that I had never even heard of. It was like, this movie's taking place in the snow. I've never seen this. So, you know, asking questions like, what's this? And it's like, oh, you never seen Empire Strikes Back? I've never even heard of it. So, didn't really watch the whole thing at the time. It was more of a, hey, we're kind of watching this, and we went about it and did whatever. So, at a later date, I don't know if the next day or whatever, I realized, man, I really want to watch this movie. So I asked my buddy, Chris, and I was like, hey, can I watch that Star Wars movie? He goes, oh, which one do you want to watch? I was like, ah, the one in the snow. That's what I always refer to it as, the one in the snow. And I still remember how amazed I was at just the story continuing, because I had never even known that it existed.
Right.
It was very, very entertaining to me at that age.
Right.
I think, even to this day, that the special effects with the time-lapse photography,
right,
as you know, advanced as we are now, I think all that was done very well, even watching it now.
Right.
I mean, when we watched, you could tell that they have done things to it to update it, because we watched, obviously, the updated version.
Right.
But it was just, everything was so clean. And I'm sure it was cleaned up, but it's pretty amazing to me.
Right.
How well it was done back then.
Well, and that was my first point. The Wampa hand, when it comes and it, you know, smacks him across the face. Now, the way that it came at the camera, it made me laugh, because it was just, it felt so cheesy. But when we actually get into, you know, the Wampa's cave and seeing this. Now, obviously, it was like a guy in a suit, right?
That's the weird thing, because that scene was not in the original cut.
Right.
The 1980 version, which I have on VHS, it's not in there. So that was kind of added. So I'm assuming it wasn't CGI. So it's had to have been somebody in a suit.
Right. Well, and I wasn't sure if it was somebody in a suit or if it was a puppet. But either way, I think that I prefer that to a lot of the special effects that they do now, because it looks so real. I feel like when something's CGI, you're like, oh, there it is, CGI. But it just, I think that there's such a higher quality when you go through the building the puppets, having a puppeteer. Like, I mean, not to branch too far off, but The Mandalorian. And, you know, having the child as a puppet, as opposed to having a little CGI green dude, it works better. And I wish that they would have stuck with that more than they have, you know, within the more recent movies. I just think that it builds more character.
I can agree with that, only it has to not be done cheesy.
Right. Right.
And I think that the way they did it was pretty good. Like I said, that was in an original movie, and if I do remember correctly, all you ever saw in the original was the hand come across, and you never, I don't remember if you ever actually saw the Wampa at all. I've seen the newer version so many times, I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. You'd have to pull it up online to see if you could find a cut of the original, but definitely a game changer for that scene, I think. It helped it because it wasn't so much CGI.
Right.
We joked about it while we're watching it, when Luke's hanging upside down and his feet are frozen in the ceiling.
Right.
How did that Wampa do that? That's one of the things that I don't quite understand with that scene, but...
Well, and it's like... What is a Wampa? Because we don't even really know anything about it. It's like, oh, there's the Wampa. But what is it? What does it do? It kind of gives you just this, like, abominable snowman type of vibe. But we don't, like, obviously he eats people. We see that. But, like, what power does he possess that he's able to freeze this fully grown man into the ceiling? What happened? And it was obviously, like, iced over. So is he smart enough that he's, like, spraying water? Like, where is he getting the water to spray, you know?
Yeah, so if you really think about it, it's kind of a scene that it doesn't have a lot of make sense to it.
Right.
But I don't even know. Did they ever refer to the creature as the Wampa? Or do we just know who it is because we just know who it is?
You know,
with the research that people have done. I don't remember them ever referring to it as a Wampa.
Maybe, does Han maybe say something about a Wampa attack?
I don't recall. That would be something interesting to look up.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we can move past the Wampa. But I want to bring up the fact that, you know, we talked about this while we're watching also, the fact that Mark Hamill's face was mangled at that point in the movie.
Right.
And that's to assist with his reconstructive surgery
that
he had back in, I don't even know, we should have looked that up, what year that was, but he had a really bad car accident.
It was actually, I looked it up before. It was either right before or right after the premiere of episode 4. He got into that car accident. And it wasn't like he was, like, doing drugs or anything. I don't think that they know. I don't think they know if he was, like, under the influence of anything. But he was driving, I don't know, whatever rich person car, like a Mercedes or something. And he was driving it down Hollywood Boulevard at, like, 120 miles per hour. And I think he was about to miss an exit, so he, like, swerved over and... That was the end of that. Apparently, it was a really nasty car wreck. And I think that they had to take, like, cartilage from his ear or something to reconstruct. They had to take cartilage out of somewhere weird or, like, reconstruct his nose. Because, like, between episode 4 and 5, like, he does not look the same at all. And that was another point that I had somewhere in here. What I wrote was, does Mark Hamill actually look that effed up after his accident, or is the special effects makeup just bad? Because, you know, I want to get into Han, Luke, and Leia in a second, because I think they have an interesting dynamic in this movie, especially in the beginning. But we'll go to his face for a second. There's the scene where, you know, right after the Wampa attacks, Han shoves him in, you know, they take him back, they finally get back to this base, and they're seeing Leia for the first time, and there's just something about his face, and it's so smooth, and, like, there's something weird going on with his eye. It just doesn't look real, and I genuinely couldn't tell if it was, like, special effects makeup for them to, like, make him look hurt, or if he was just that messed up after the accident. Now, taking into account, like, filming and film timelines and everything, if after the premiere, either right around the time that episode 4 came out, he probably wouldn't still look as bad, because usually a feature takes around 15 days of filming. So, with all the special effects and stuff, I don't think that they would have shot immediately after the accident. if it came out 2 years later, I mean, maybe like 6 months later they would have shot. You know, this is just all guesstimating based off of like what I know. But I don't think he would still be that messed up. So I just, is it bad makeup? Or was he really that hurt? I just, it didn't feel right. You know what I mean?
It's just something was off.
Right. And I couldn't tell how. Speaking on that specific scene, I want to talk about Han, Luke, and Leia and their relationship in this movie, because I think that it's very interesting. So I want to start with Han going back out to find, you know, Luke in this snowstorm. And I think that it's very interesting to show the dynamic between Han and Luke and Han and Leia, because we have this opening scene where Han's like, I'm leaving, it's time for me to go. And Leia's begging him to stay, and he doesn't want to stay. But the second that he hears Luke is, like, hurt, he's like, oh, never mind, I'm staying, and I'm getting you out of here. Like, I think that that is very interesting in terms of, like, how that goes on to develop a little bit differently for, you know, Han and Luke to have this tension. Or, I'm sorry, Han and Leia to have this tension that, you know, causes the whole weird incest part. But, I mean, how else can you describe it, really? And I think that that is also interesting, too, because Leia isn't kissing Luke because she has any sort of, you know, romantic feelings towards him. It's literally just to fuck you to Han.
Right.
It's really just to piss him off. And I think that that isn't something that people talk about very often, because they're like, ew, that's your brother.
Right, because it wasn't like a romantic kind of thing.
Right. It wasn't. It was her being like, oh, so that's how you want to act? Like, that's it? From the perspective of a woman, like, that's what she was doing, you know? And then the effect that separating everyone also has on that. They take Luke and they send him to, you know, what is the name of Dagobah, right? And then they...
Well, they don't send him.
Well...
Obi-Wan sends him.
They.
Yeah,
they, you know, George Lucas.
Gotcha.
So they send Luke to Dagobah, and then they send Han and Leia off on their own little mission. So it forces them to address these feelings that they obviously have for each other. I think that's part of what makes this movie so good. It's the development that they establish between these three main characters, you know? And a lot of it is done in this movie. So I think that's another reason why I think that this is the best Star Wars movie. Because Han and Leia, from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, are completely different. And Luke as well. I mean, it's not as prominent with Luke, I think. I think that this is really Leia and Han's movie. And I don't know if you feel the same way.
I could see that. I could see where you'd say that.
Right. Like, in terms of development, this is their developmental movie.
Right. If you watch it all develop, you can see how they change.
Right.
And it goes from the snarky remarks to each other to them caring about each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And while we just brought that up, I brought that up, I want to actually comment on the terms that they use in this, in the Star Wars movie, because it's not like terms that everybody uses, you know? And I the scruffy looking nerf herder. I mean, who says stuff like that, you know? It's just so it's typical.
Right.
And then when Luke comes back and Han's looking at him and he says, oh man, you know, you look good. You look good enough to rip the ears off of Gundar. You know, nobody knows what those are either, but they just reference things like that. And that's what I think makes this whole Star Wars universe very unique. And that's where I come from as the fan point of view, is that you can pick out these things, these fun things. And I see a lot of it in Empire.
Right.
And what I can say also is in Episode 4, when they remastered it, they did a lot of changes. They added a lot of scenes. They added a lot of CGI. There was not as much in Empire as there was in A New Hope.
Right.
And we'll get into Jedi, the next one of the movies that we watch in the future, because, oh man, I got a lot of things. I just didn't care about that one. But watching again... After, you know, it's been a few years since I've seen Empire, I picked up on a lot of interesting things. And I think from your perspective of, you know, not teaching me, but pointing things out in movies, right. I'm a little bit better at analyzing certain mm-hmm. scenes. And I got a couple more that, you know, once we get to that part of the movie, I got, you know, some different views that are kind of interesting. But yeah, you know, just the whole universe itself and how unique it is. And there's another thing I kind of picked up on. Do you realize that in the Star Wars universe, nobody really has any pets? Nobody, because there's so many different creatures right. and aliens and all this stuff that what would you consider a pet? In place of pets, they have droids.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
That was one of the things I picked up on. I was like, you know, nobody has like a companion that's an animal. It's all droids, right. you know? And in a lot of ways, the droids are like their freaking servants. It's kind of right. it's kind of depressing in a way, but it's, you know, that's kind of one of the things I picked up on. It's right. kind of interesting.
And I think that it would be interesting to see going off of that. You know, we saw like in the prequel trilogy how certain people like treated their droids, especially I think in The Phantom Menace. What's the name of that guy that owns Anakin?
I don't know. You put me on the spot. I can't think of what his name is.
Little freaky looking dude.
Yeah, the guy that flies.
Yeah, I can't. He has a weird name, I remember. I'm so embarrassed,
I don't know it.
But Go ahead.
I'll think of it while you're talking.
I'm sure. And somebody is listening right now and they're like, ah, you know. So, you know, the way that he treats, like, humans, you know, the Star Wars universe is built, like, very largely around slavery, which is strange, like slavery of people. And then, you know, you also have like the slavery of droids. And like, obviously seeing in the Skywalker saga, the way that they treat their droids, like, you know, they kind of treat them like companions. They treat them like friends. You know, you got R2-D2 and C-3PO, you know, as annoyed as everyone seems to get with C-3PO, they still treat him like a person, which is interesting. And then, you know, you have BB-8 where they kind of treat him like a dog, but like a human dog. It's very strange.
Right, so that's where I get the pet feel to
right.
it.
Right. And then like R2, I would say he's like kind of in between because they also treat him like a human, but like also a dog.
Right.
Which is interesting.
That's a strange concept, I think that's where they were going with the whole right. thing. I mean, because like I said, when you have all these different aliens and species right. and everything, I mean, look at Chewie. Chewie's a Wookiee, right. and Wookiees look like Bigfoot. So it's obviously right. an animal type of creature, but it's not a pet, you know?
Right.
He's the co-pilot.
Oh, you know what I didn't know? That Hoth is the system, not the planet. They were saying, you know, we're in the Hoth system, but everyone always refers to Hoth as if it's a planet. It's like a numbered planet within the Hoth system. And it's the same thing with Dagobah, which I'd never picked up on before.
I always just thought they used the term system instead of planet.
Right. I mean, but like in terms of space, you know what I mean? But I mean, I guess maybe it's a system of, like, smaller planets that make up Hoth. Like, maybe the Hoth system is, like Hoth and its moons. But
maybe.
But to refer to it as a system, I thought was interesting. Because, you know, when you think of a system, you think of, like, a solar system. So you would think it would be multiple planets. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think bringing up the Hoth thing is, you know, in a lot of the Star Wars movies, all of them, series,
right.
All the single movies and all that, they all go to the same type of planets. And the most common one they go to
is the desert planet?
Well, Tatooine.
Right.
They almost, I think, every series, Tatooine has shown up in there. I would really like for them to show up at Hoth or something, because you've never right. seen that ever again. And that's the only place that I don't know if they're called AT-ATs or AT-ATs, because I hear it both ways. I always said AT-ATs, right. but that is the only real planet that you ever really saw.
Right, something like that.
Those. I mean, you had the ones when they go to Endor, but the two-legged
right, type those of are the AT-ATs.
There you go. Yeah. But, you know, I'd like to see more of Hoth in right. like future movies, because, you know, I always thought that was kind of neat just to be in the snow.
Now, going off of the AT-ATs, Now, okay, I understand that they needed to have something with a weakness, right? Okay. But why would they have them have such long legs that are so easily able to be toppled? Like, them, like, going around with the, like...
Toe cable, yeah.
Yeah, like, you're gonna tell me that the Empire engineers didn't think of that? And, you know, Luke blows up another one by, like, getting up under it, and he throws a grenade in, and he falls. Which, how did he not break his legs in that fall?
That's a thermal detonator, by the way.
Well,
go ahead.
You know, whatever. But... How is it that, like, that would have been, I think, more realistic? Why would they create something? This is, like, the Empire. Why, whoever is building these Empire, like, machines, are they, like, doing it on purpose? Because, obviously, if you've seen Rogue One, you know that that guy purposely built the Death Star with...
A weakness.
So, are they, like, all secretly working, like, against the Empire? Like, what are they thinking here?
That's a good way to look at it. I never really thought about it that way. I thought it was just like, a dramatic way of... But I'm sure that's how it was all brought up. It was just dramatic. But,
right.
You know, anything in these movies... See, those movies were made so long ago, mm-hmm. but they weren't made... As, you know, we're going to make this long series. Right. You know, they really think ahead with a lot of this. But there's so much stuff that ties back to these original right. trilogies that it works so well in the making of that. Mm-hmm. And that's another point. You know, maybe they are just that stupid and or somebody's sabotaging.
Right.
So, you know, they could spin it almost any way.
Right.
That they'd want to, that would make sense, because it almost feels like they didn't give a whole lot of detail
right.
back then. So it's an interesting concept. I like that. I do want to mention something that you said during the movie that cracked me up, because when they're looking for Luke and the guy's flying and he says, oh, this is Rogue 2. And then you had Rogue 3. So I say to Brooke, where's Rogue 1? And she says, they're dead. I was like, oh... I don't want to say too soon, but it kind of got me a little bit, you know, referring to Rogue One where everyone died. Sorry for the spoilers, but...
Yeah. Hey, listen, Rogue One came out in 2016. This is not a spoiler-free podcast. I mean, listen, we'll talk about it more if we're doing newer movies and stuff.
Well, and, you know, now that we've brought up Rogue One, that was one of those movies where I really didn't know how to feel about it, but it made so much sense, right. and it led right up to A New Hope.
Yeah, it's
But
beautiful.
As you're watching that movie, you just get that feeling when it's almost right. over, and you're like, holy shit, everyone's gonna die.
Right.
So it's kind of depressing, but in a good storytelling right. way. Like, man, that was so good.
Right.
So I just think that's a really great filler
right.
For a situation like that. And I really would like them to do that more. I know right. they got all this new series is coming right. out, and they're all going to tie together, but I'm really afraid of them overlapping things that don't make sense.
Right.
You know, we've already gotten to The Mandalorian. Sorry if nobody's seen The Mandalorian, but you've had ample time at this point. But The Mandalorian, having Luke show up in that last episode, it kind of may have thrown a wrench in the whole the whole sequel series.
Right. Well,
because...
And that...
Grogu does not exist.
Right.
So I don't know quite how they're going to spin that in there, but I did think that scene was awesome.
I've seen so many posts about Grogu and this, you know, being in this situation where he's with Luke, okay? Now, Grogu, what do we want to say that Mandalorian takes place in? It takes place very soon after Episode 6, if not, like, during two after?
Oh, it's right after six.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously the Empire has fallen.
Right.
And that's where, like, even the opening scenes
right.
of the very first episode of Mandalorian, you see the stormtrooper heads up on, the helmets up on stakes. And you can just see that, you know, credits aren't worth what they used to be. So
right.
it's almost like a depression kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely takes place right after six. I wouldn't think too far after.
Right, because of the way that we see Luke, the age, the outfit. Like, obviously, it is in, you know, what, like two or three years. It's not very soon after
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, I'd give you that because, you know, time it exists a little bit different in right. those movies. But yeah, I mean, when you see his face, obviously it's CGI. We're not right. going to doubt that. But I think it was done fantastic.
Right.
When he pulled his hood off and it was just like, oh my God, I just went back to, you know, the freaking early 90s. For me personally, I'm right. sorry I didn't see them till late. But yeah, I mean, that took me way back just to see him. You get that rush over you like, oh my God, I can't even believe that.
Right.
And the whole scene with the lightsaber and he's going down the hallway and, you know, he's basically Jedi Master Luke at this point.
Right.
You know, he kind of leave episode 6 where, you know, he defeats Darth Vader and it's like a big deal. But now he's like, he's obviously done more training and it's just mm-hmm. like, it's huge.
Right.
And from my perspective, that's fantastic. I love the way it was done.
Right.
We're still on Hoth at this point, but I just want to bring something up because it's one of those situations where you know the music,
mm-hmm.
but when you hear it the first time,
mm-hmm.
so when Darth Vader shows up at the Hoth base.
Right.
When he's walking in, that is the first time they play the Imperial March. It's
is
not
it?
The official way, but it's like it's a version of it. And they played it a little bit throughout.
Mm-hmm.
But then in back when episode 3,
right.
when the Execute Order 66 and all the clone troopers are lined up, that's the first time you ever really hear it.
Right.
Because that's that, oh boy, this is now
right.
the stormtrooper army that's gonna, you know,
right.
destroy the galaxy. But that's the very first time. But in the original trilogy, Darth Vader entering Hoth is the first time you heard it. And it was like, every time I hear it, it kind of gives me goosebumps. That's
right.
actually the ringtone on my phone because I love that. But it's played a couple more times throughout the series
right.
or throughout that movie that or it gets more and more in depth.
Right.
It gets more popular in episode 6
mm-hmm.
when they hijack the shuttle and they end up on the new Death Star.
Right.
So I like the whole score mm-hmm. of Star Wars. I mean, it's just fantastic to me.
Right. Well, going off of them being on Hoth and then, you know, Vader enters, I think that they do a very interesting thing here with color. With color and Vader and Leia specifically, because the color that is mostly associated with Leia is white, right? So white can mean a bunch of different things. A lot of people associate Leia as like, you know, the virgin. You know, why she's always dressed in white, which I'll get into a little bit more once we talk about Cloud City. But they have this, like, pure white scenery. Leia's dressed in white. And then the only thing that's black within that scene is Vader. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. So they do this interesting thing where he is invading this, like, pure space. This light space where he is the dark side and then they're fighting for the light side. And they do this several times throughout the movie. They do this throughout all the movies that have anything to do with Vader. But I think it's very interesting how they use color in this movie. And I don't know if it's intentional, but it feels very intentional. And it's beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that that's something that the everyday viewer wouldn't really, like, pick up on. But if you think about it, like this is their space that he's invading. This is a space of good, and here comes the evil right into it. So I just thought that that was really interesting.
I'm sure it was done intentionally, but it's just been more noticeable
right.
as the stories have all developed. But yeah, I mean, I can see exactly what you mean. I would have never thought about it in that way. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, that's the typical story is, you know, the good versus evil.
Right.
And just the way they do the colors and everything. Sure, I can understand that. And I'm sure that they did that on purpose.
Right.
That's interesting. Now we've left Hoth at this point.
Right.
They had their little battle and, you know, the Empire invaded them and Luke has his vision. Well, he has his vision early on when his Tauntaun freezes
right.
and he's crawling through the snow and he sees Obi-Wan as the ghost.
Right.
And that's that's a very powerful scene because he's basically still training him at this point,
Right.
and he's telling him to go visit the Jedi Master that, you know, trained him. And that's
Right.
our first adventure into the Yoda series. I mean, Yoda is just one of those characters. Darth Vader and Yoda were always my top favorite characters forever. Just, I think that when this movie was out, Yoda had a very small part, but
Right.
he was funny and creepy,
Yeah.
but he had that change in
Right.
that scene where, you know, Luke gets there and thinks, oh, it's just this creature that lives on
This little
Dagobah,
frog man. Yeah.
because, you know, in Dagobah it's like a swamp. You know, there's
Right.
snakes and, you know, all this creepy things going on. Then you get this green guy with these ears and you're just like, oh man, this guy's definitely native to this planet.
Right.
But even to this day, nobody knows where Yoda comes from. He
Right.
doesn't have a backstory, which is kind of good because that's something they can really develop
Right.
over it, you know, as many films as they want to do.
Right.
And it's just this, it's endless the way that
Right.
they could do this. Now with The Mandalorian, now you've thrown Grogu in there, so nobody has a real backstory on him either. You know,
Right.
everybody has their theories of where he came from.
Right. And then we also have Yaddle. Yaddle, who
Which
is very
I argued that didn't even exist, but I went back and I watched the scene in episode one, and there she is, some creepy
just
looking Yoda
chilling.
character, and it's like, I never even noticed that she was sitting there.
Yeah.
And are we assuming that she was a Jedi? Because she was in the Jedi Council.
Right.
So
So, yeah. That's
that's a whole nother story. That's just strange to me. But yeah, I called bullshit the first time somebody told me there was a female Yoda. I don't think so. And I was proven wrong. So, you know, so they're on the Dagobah system, and, you know, that's where Luke really gets his typical training.
Right.
You know, the training that everybody always talks about, how he's standing up on, or he's, you know, doing a handstand, he's lifting rocks, and this is the first time that he's actually using the force,
Right. Like for
like for
real.
real. Like he
Yeah.
used it in the Wampa's cave when he got his lightsaber back and got
Right.
free, but this is the first time you really see the force being used. And when the sequel, when the prequels came out, and you had Qui-Gon Jinn and young Obi-Wan, and they're fighting with lightsabers, and it was like so intense, and they're just moving things like it's nothing. So obviously, that kind of shows you how advanced a Jedi can be. And then, you know, Luke's just learning. It's like, yeah, it's not real good,
Right.
but it kind of works because, you know, he's still learning. You know, I
Right.
don't really know how else to explain that, but that's where I get the, you know, everybody says, well, you know, it was so powerful in the first set of movies,
Right.
but it's not that powerful now because it's almost like the Force is dying. They're trying to revive the
Right.
Force because, you know, that's what the Empire's trying to get
Right.
rid of. You know,
And
they
then,
wanted to destroy all Jedi.
right. And then, like, on top of that, you have this whole like prophecy of the Empire being brought back by the son of the man who destroyed it, which is so powerful. Like, it's very much a, you know, you are not your parent, which is, you know, just because they did something horrible doesn't mean that you're horrible. And I think that that's a really good theme that we see a lot throughout these movies specifically. But yeah, that's all I had to add. I do have a question about Dagobah. What is up with specifically episode 4 and 5 and just putting things like having these weird sea creatures underwater that are trying to eat them? Because, you know, we have this creature on Dagobah that we only see like the tentacle of come up, and you know it steals R2, and then that like directly mirrors what we saw in episode 4 where they're stuck in the compactor and you know something grabs Luke, like grabs his foot and drags him under. Like what is that?
I think it's just an, it was back then, it was just an easy way to have a creature that they didn't have to put a lot of thought into. It's
Yeah.
underwater. We'll just, you know, kind of grab them and take them down, and, you know, we don't have to really show anything.
Right.
I think it was more of a you know, that they didn't have the effects that they have now.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's there. If you think about it, though, you got the all the worms that are in these caves, and then right. you got the Sarlacc pit,
right?
And it's just all these things that I think that they just they had to come up with something right. that's secretive, or you know, yeah. they just can't see. That's just easy.
Right. And I'm sure there's somebody out here who could tell us, you know, oh, that's this species and they're not actually even from Dagobah and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure there is somebody right now listening to this, like, kicking us. Like, right. how dare you not know? But I'm sorry, we don't know, unfortunately. So, I mean, I don't have anything else about Dagobah.
No, I mean, there's really not much that happened. I mean... We hit all the main points on right. it because, you know, I mean, you know what happens. He learns the Force, basically, and they're trying to get him to continuous training, but he's getting that feeling now that he's getting right. that, man, something's wrong. I got to go, you know, so he's got to leave to go and help mm-hmm. his friends. One of the funny things I want to point out is watching this movie now, Harrison Ford playing Han Solo. Mm-hmm. is Indiana Jones in Star Wars. If you watch his mannerisms and the way he talks and just the stupid comments he makes, he's Indiana Jones. They're the same guy.
Yes.
It's kind of weird, but it's kind of fitting. I mean, it's Harrison Ford.
I mean, yeah. I mean, unfortunately.
I just picked up a lot more of it on this right. this session that when we watched it.
See... Now, I don't know if you know this about Harrison Ford. You probably do. He wasn't an actor before Episode 4. Did you know that?
No.
He was a handyman. And I think he fixed something for somebody. And they were like, hey, you should be an actor. And he was like, what? And they were like, yes, try out for this movie, Star Wars. And well, then he got the part.
I don't think that there was anybody in the original trilogy, or in the original Star Wars, that was
right.
You know, like a well-known actor. Right. James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader. I mean, right. I don't even know what he had done previous to that, right. but you know, thinking back now, there's a lot of stars in those movies, but right. yeah, they were all like nobodies. And I feel like obviously the story was all created. You know, George Lucas had this idea mm-hmm. and he wrote all these stories about them. And it was like, we're going to make this movie. We're going to start with Episode 4, which even to this day weirds me out. When I was a kid watching that very first scroll come across mm-hmm. and you're like, what the heck is episode IV? I don't even know what that means.
Right.
You know, I didn't know. And then it was pointed out to me that that's Roman numeral 4. Well, why are they starting with 4? So my dad tells me, oh yeah, you know, these were originally 9 movies. 9 movies? Well, where's all the other movies? Oh, they never made them. And then, you know, come to find out years later, right. they made 3 movies, which I never knew.
Really? But you didn't know about them as they were coming out in the 90s?
Well, it wasn't until 99, I believe, that episode 1 came right. out. But I knew that, like I said, the trilogy existed when I was a young kid. But it was
right.
it was probably like close to the 90s, that like 1988, I'd say, mm-hmm. when I realized that the first trilogy existed.
Right.
And then... Back when they sold videos, right. I bought the original trilogy, which you've seen. I've showed it to yeah. you. I still have them. I bought them back in 1995. And then I feel like that was when Star Wars really picked up again.
Right.
But it was a slow go during my high school years. Because right. when I was in high school, you know, I was looked at as, oh, man, this guy likes Star Wars. And Star Wars is awesome. And nobody really talked about it. I had a couple friends that were like... You know, yeah, you know, I've seen them. Oh, yeah, do you know this about this or this about... So there was certain people I could have conversations with about it, but mm-hmm. it's nothing like right. it is now. I mean, the fact that me and you could sit here and have an in-depth conversation about the entire Star Wars universe,
right.
that says something. Because early 90s, Star Wars was dead. Nobody cared right. anything about it. And then Episode 1 came out and you had all the big fans that were just tearing it apart right. because it was just so bad. But as it all developed, I mean, I think that all the movies, they're good in their own right. way. You got certain scenes and certain situations like that. It's kind of dumb, but...
Right. I think that going off of that, I think that George Lucas has this really big problem, especially in the prequel trilogy, with something we call killing your darlings. which is sometimes there are scenes and plot points and things that you really, really love, but it just doesn't work. So unfortunately, you have to, you know, move on, and you have to get rid of these, like, babies that, you know, you've spent, you know, that you have in your head that you want so badly to put on screen. But in the long run, it's, you know, it isn't going to do anything for you. Like, it might just confuse your audience more. And I think that that is specifically a problem I see a lot in episode two. But in the original trilogy, I feel like they're much more cohesive. And I think that that has a lot to do with George Lucas relying on other people to help him. Because I think we see a lot in the prequel trilogy that he kind of did whatever he wanted. And I think that's the reason that those movies suffered as much as they did. Like you said, there are good parts of the prequel movies. And I think that we're at a point in time where people will admit there are good things about the prequel because everyone wants to hate the sequel movies now. But that's a really big problem that George Lucas has, is this inability to, like, kill his darlings and, you know, make the executive decision that I don't need this in order to further my story. So
that's interesting. Never thought about any of that, but it's a good point.
So I want to move on, and I want to talk about the scene where you see them put on Vader's helmet from behind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it does something interesting in terms of foreshadowing, because it shows you that, you know, you can see the back of his bald, burnt head, you know. This is a person. Like, it is a person in a suit, regardless of, you know, however robotic he is at this point. You know, at this point, people didn't know the extent to which he was mangled. But, like, deep down, he's still a human. So I think that it does a lovely job of telling us, without telling us, that Vader is still human deep down, regardless of all of the bad things that he's done and will do. And it kind of shows us that at some point he will, you know, turn, he will become Anakin Skywalker again, even if it's for, you know, a brief moment. But I think that that was a very good way to show it without, you know, they always say show, not tell. So I think that was a very good way to show that he's still human without telling us, you know, oh, he's a human. And then you have the foreshadowing, of course, because at this point we do not know he's, you know, Anakin Skywalker. So it kind of gets the audience's, like, gears turning in their head without them even realizing it. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think, you know, you brought up foreshadowing, the scene on Dagobah, right, when Luke goes into the forest, or, you know, right, the swamp, and, you know, Yoda's telling him, you know, you don't need your weapons. And he looks at him and is like, yeah, I'm taking my weapon. And that's when he has his first, not legitimate, facing with Darth Vader.
Right.
And, you know, they have their short battle, which is all a dream, where he goes in there,
right,
and he basically defeats Darth Vader, knocks his head off, basically, and the
right
helmet pops open, and it's got Luke's face inside.
Right, which was...
And it's very foreshadowing.
Right.
Well, you know, now that you know the story, but was it really obvious back then?
Right.
Or is it, damn, that's kind of weird? Or was it more for you to think that if you continue down the dark side, this could be you someday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the way I think you were supposed to see it.
Right.
Was, you know, that you know, don't go into the dark side because you're going to end up like that.
I also think that, because this comes a little bit before this little force thing that they got going on, when we see Palpatine and, you know, he's talking to Vader and he's, you know, he's the son of Anakin Skywalker, why doesn't Vader have a reaction to this? Like, why isn't he like, oh, you know, he just seems to, like, listen to it and is like, oh, yeah, that's weird. But, like, he knows he's Anakin Skywalker. So that also throws me back to episode 3. You know, Palpatine tells him that Padme is dead, right? But is there ever any mention of what happened to the children?
Right.
So, first of all, is this him in this moment finding out, holy shit, my kids are alive, or my kid is alive? Because I don't know if he knows about the twins at this point. I don't think he finds out about Leia until episode 6.
Yeah, he thought, well, that's when they show it in the movie. Right. That then, you know, Luke basically gives it away by, you know, showing his feelings and, you know,
right.
He figures it out. But, you know, going back to that with does he know the kids survived? It was very odd in episode 3 that Obi-Wan, okay, so they split the kids up.
Right.
It's very odd that of all places you would take Luke would be to Tatooine, where you're from. And it's like, that's the most obvious place. But maybe it was just too obvious. And right. It was like, ah, he'll never find them here. But I think that was just like a way they had to kind of fill the story.
Right, but then...
And it made sense. I mean, you saw Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru show up early because they're young kids. Right. You know, and they basically raise him.
But then on top of that, because when Padme is dead, they stuff her belly to make her look pregnant, to make it seem like the children died with her. So why is it that this isn't a bigger moment? Like, obviously they didn't know that they were going to do all that yet, but it just doesn't feel the same. You know what I mean? I feel like there should be more of a reaction from it. Obviously, we don't want to give it away. We don't want to give the twist away to the audience and, you know, this and that. But why have Palpatine specifically, like, mention he is that Luke is the son of Anakin? Like, what is the point in that? You know what I mean? You know, you could just say he's the son of a powerful Jedi.
You know, I want to stop you for a second because that whole scene was changed.
Right.
That scene where he talks to the Emperor.
Right.
And it's that the whole Emperor scene, it took place, but the Emperor was a different actor.
Right.
And they CGI'd the actual actor in there that played Palpatine. I may be wrong, but I think that they changed the dialogue in that scene.
You think so?
I don't remember them ever referring to Luke as the son of Anakin. I just really don't remember that. That would be something interesting to look up. That I think that was added.
Yeah.
Because of the prequels. You know, all that stuff has just been changed and changed and changed. I still think they tweak things here and there.
Right.
But that was one of those scenes where it was easy for them to change because you had a CGI and a guy in a mask. So it wasn't like you had to match up dialogue with what they're saying. So it was very easy for them to go in there and just rewrite that. But I'm pretty sure that scene was changed. And, you know, maybe they just didn't do a real good job on it by explaining it very well.
Yeah, I think so.
So Luke decides he's leaving Dagobah because he had a disturbance in the Force.
Right.
Because, you know, he's starting to get those feelings because his training is improving.
Okay, so let's talk about Cloud City then. Mm-hmm. Because this is a difficult movie to talk about linearly because of the cross-cutting that we have going on. You know, we see Han and Leia doing this while Luke's on Dagobah, and they're doing this while he's on Dagobah. So everything's kind of happening in such a choppy way. So we're kind of going backwards, but not really. I just wrote when they got to Cloud City, Lando is so cool. I think he's cool.
Well, you know why he's so cool, though? It's because of Solo.
Yes.
And that's, I have that written here because that was such a great scene after you've seen Solo.
Yes.
Because watching Empire, and you're like, okay, I know the story. And then watching Solo, when they keep referring to, oh, hey, you know, what'd you do to my ship? Hey, your ship, you know, I won this for me fair and square.
Right.
So you knew there was always a history. You just didn't know the story.
Right.
So when they did Solo, and I'm actually getting goosebumps now too, because when you see Solo and you see how much of a swindler the both of them are,
right.
You know, you see young Lando, which I think they cast very well.
Oh, yes. Donald Glover was the obvious choice. He did phenomenal.
Absolutely. And when you see him fly in the Millennium Falcon, you get that cool feeling like, oh, man, this is like where it started. This is really cool. But I have it written here, too, because I think that when I was a kid and you talked about the Millennium Falcon, you thought, oh man, this ship is so awesome. And you go throughout the movie and the Millennium Falcon is a piece of shit. And they always refer to it like that. But it really is. I mean, this thing breaks down and is just crap. And even if you look on the inside of it, it just looks like it's like a dumpster. It's just it's just junk. But I think as a kid, when you see that for the first time, it's so futuristic. You're like, oh man, this ship is so awesome.
Right.
But when you see other ships, like especially when they came out with the prequels, you can see how a ship is supposed to be and how that ship probably was.
Right.
But even in, I don't even know when Millennium Falcon first showed up. But when I know when they have it in the sequels, and they're like, oh, go get in that starship over there. And they're like, that piece of crap over there. And bam, there it is. and that's such a good moment. But yes, the Lando scene on both sides of it, whether it be Episode 5, Cloud City, or Solo with Lando. It's just, it's awesome. I think it fits so well together.
Yeah, definitely. And I see, okay. So I took a Star Wars class this past semester. It was all about the mythology of Star Wars, you know, analyzing it as a modern myth, you know, do with that what you will. So I rewatched all of the Star Wars movies in order, except for Rogue One and Solo. So
okay,
I
want to stop you for 1 second because I actually have a question on that.
Okay.
How did you watch the movies? And if, in your opinion, if you were going to tell somebody about Star Wars that has never seen it, which order would you watch them in? Or tell people to watch them in?
So I watched it numerically in timeline
order. 1 through 9.
1 through 9, then Rogue One, then Solo. Personally, I have heard that the best way to watch it is 1, 2, 3, or I'm sorry, it's 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Wow, I've never heard of it that way.
Because if you watch 4 and 5, you get, you know, original Star Wars. Then you get the twist of Anakin being Vader. And then
you go back to Anakin's story.
Then you end with 6, which is a high note. And I'm also going to say, rewatching the sequel trilogy, it is not that bad. It really is not that bad. There are so many babies in the Star Wars fandom. People are going to get mad, but it's not bad. It really isn't bad. And Rey's not a bad character. People just hate her because she's a woman. That's it.
I don't know. I don't think that she was a bad character. I think it was just an adjustment period.
Right.
Of, you know, are you learning the story of Luke in a woman's perspective? Right. I think it was just hard for people, me especially, just to come to the realization that it's not Luke Skywalker anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just a difference. I wouldn't look at it as, you know, oh, I can't watch that because she's a woman. I never had that feeling. It was more of an adjustment of character.
I think it's a subconscious thing, to be honest with you, because people tend to refer to Rey as a Mary Sue, which is, you know, if you're not in fandom, it's basically a female character who can do everything regardless of having no, like, it doesn't have any difficulties or anything. But Anakin and Luke kind of learn less than Rey does. I feel like Rey is training, like, through up until the final film. You know, Anakin and Luke, it just seemed like they learned so fast. You know what I mean? Like, by the time we get to 6, we see, like, Luke has completed his training. And, like, I think that people give Rey more trouble than is necessary, if that makes sense. They're not bad movies. They're really not bad movies. And I think that The Last Jedi is a good movie. I just like it. I just liked it. And I think that Rian Johnson is a really, really talented director, just not for Star Wars. He directed several episodes of Breaking Bad, and he also directed Knives Out, which are phenomenal. That's phenomenal. And he knows how to foreshadow so well. He just does a good job. But I think that he needs something that he himself has, like, the ability to just, you know, do whatever he wants. He can't be enclosed within, you know, like a Disney or a fandom space. Specifically when you're working for Disney, they want you to do certain things. That's what happens when you work for like these big conglomerates and you're writing like sequels and prequels and all that stuff. He's not a bad director and it's not a bad movie. It's just people don't like it because it's not J.J. Abrams.
Right. Now, see, I would have always suggested that you watch the movies in order of release because right. That's the way I saw them, mm-hmm. you know, and I just feel that there's so many hidden Easter eggs
right.
by watching them in those ways. Like the fact that they talk about space travel,
right.
but you know that, oh, you know, you're going to do that in these films. But it's just right. it's kind of funny to hear like young Obi-Wan say things that are going to eventually happen right. to them. You know, he says makes a joke with Anakin. He says, you know, how do I know that you're just going to be the death of me? Obviously, that's a foreshadow
right.
because he kills him. But that's the way I would watch them personally. Right. Now, on my poster, we have a Star Wars icon. There's one of the movies we got to watch, but it's very generic. It just says Star Wars. So what do you portray that as?
Right.
The first movie, the second, you know, whatever it is. So right. Tommy and I are watching all 9 movies, and that's once we get through the 9th movie, then we're gonna decide that we're gonna scratch that one off.
Right.
Just because I've seen everything with the exception of the animated series, which everybody says you gotta watch, but I really can't get to, I can't do the cartoons. I have a hard time following them for some right. reason. But you can go back to your mythology class since I cut you off.
I was just gonna say that rewatching everything, I really discovered my love for Solo as a movie, because that's what we were talking about. We're talking about Lando. I just think that movie is just so well done. And I think that the cast of that movie did such a great job. And I know that people don't like the main actor. I'm sorry. He's only been in that. I don't know what else he's been in. But he does such a good job capturing Harrison Ford's essence, because the mannerisms, the way that he speaks, the way that his body language is, like the way he conducts himself, that's Han Solo. Yeah, he doesn't look like him, but that's Han Solo. That's the character. You know what I mean? So I think that people, I still see it. I'm in a lot of Star Wars groups on Facebook. I still see people, you know, irritated, especially after Luke came back in The Mandalorian. They're just, you know, why didn't they just use CGI and make it Harrison Ford, blah 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 blah. Well, it came out, you know, 2 years ago. You would have to do an entire film. People don't realize how expensive that is to start. Yes, Disney is a multi-million dollar company, but even Disney has its limits when it comes to Star Wars.
Right. You know what I mean? Anytime that they've superimposed a face on somebody, it's only been just for a scene.
Right.
You know, they did it at the end of Rogue One.
They actually did it with that general guy a lot throughout that movie. I can't think of his name. I'm sorry. People are yelling at me.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yes, that guy. But, like, I didn't know originally when I saw that movie, but when I went back to rewatch it for this class, I noticed it. I'm like, he looks like a video game character.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't. And that just goes back to my whole spiel in the beginning. I would rather see the puppets. I would rather you do makeup. I would rather you cast somebody who doesn't look entirely like them. But as long as you tell me that that's who that's it, fine. I don't care. That's fine with me.
Yeah. I mean, there's been plenty of times.
It's just better.
They'll cast somebody and they'll show you a picture of them and they're like, man, why would they pick that guy?
Right.
But once they do, they change their hair and right. they put them in the outfit, bam, you know, you've got your person.
Exactly.
And that's for any movie, not just, you know, a Star Wars movie.
Right.
So we got to Bespin City, or I'm sorry, Bespin, Cloud City.
Right.
We meet Lando. Boba Fett is actually introduced in this movie,
right.
which is just totally iconic to me. It's just, you know, it's so awesome. But we were watching it, and they never, ever refer to him as Boba Fett in Episode 5.
Right.
They call him the Bounty Hunter. And there's a whole bunch, all the Bounty Hunters are there when they tell him, you know, they want him to get Luke Skywalker. But You know, Boba Fett's not looking for Luke Skywalker. Boba Fett is looking for Han Solo.
Right.
So that's why he's there at Cloud City, and they only refer to him as the bounty hunter, which is interesting. And even going back to Episode 2, when Jango Fett is introduced, they never refer to him as a Mandalorian. So Mandalorians didn't even really exist until the Mandalorian show came out. They never really referred to them as that. Because I thought, you know, they were talking about Jango Fett, and they're saying, oh man, they must have referred to him as a Mandalorian, but they don't. They refer to him also as a bounty hunter.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, Boba Fett is an awesome character that didn't get enough time in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it's not until Episode 6 when Han calls him Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when he's blinded and Chewie's talking to him in his freaking Wookiee tongue, and he's saying, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, where? And he turns and he hits his jetpack. He goes flying, ends up in the Sarlacc pit.
Right.
And you think, oh man, you just got rid of a great character. And then that was the end of Boba Fett.
Right.
And then he reappeared. And then in The Mandalorian, when he popped up, that was freaking awesome too.
So now that we're in Cloud City, I want to talk about Dinner with Vader. Because I think that the whole thing with Leia here is very interesting. Because, you know, we've had her throughout the film so far. She's been trapped on this ship with Han, and you know, they're forced to rehash, you know, their feelings for one another and their relationship and, you know, all of this stuff. You know, we see her in her iconic white throughout this whole thing. And for the first time, as she's helping to get the, like, ship ready, we see her get dirty, which is very interesting because she doesn't do that. You know what I mean? Even as a general and, you know, as a princess, she doesn't get dirty. She has people who do that for her, if that makes sense. So now it's like forcing her to kind of mature as, you know, as a character. And something that my professor brought up when we talked about this was the way in which she's dressed. Once, you know, they go into Cloud City, they change, they clean themselves up. She's wearing this entirely red, like, outfit with a white shawl over top of her. And he was like, you know, that represents Leia becoming a woman. And I was like, wow, I never thought about it that way. She's finally, like, growing up. You know what I mean? Like, she's growing up, she's taking responsibility. And she's, like, going into this adult relationship with Han, which is something she's obviously never had before. So I was like, that's really interesting. And, you know, the color red is, like, the color of maturity, you know, referring to women and, you know, menstruation and all that gross stuff. But it's very interesting in Carrie Fisher's body language in this scene, because you can see when she's standing there, she has this white shawl over top of her, and as she's talking to Han, you know, she's just letting it, like, kind of flow. But the second that Lando comes in, she, like, covers herself with it. And I just thought that was very interesting as, like, this is for him, this is not for you kind of thing that she's got going on. Which, I mean, obviously that's, like, you know, a feminist type of thing. But I just think that it's interesting to see Leia mature in this movie in particular. Because from then on, you know, we see her in other colors. We see her in green later on in Episode 6. And, you know, and we see her in her slave outfit. So she's developing in a way. But I think that something that's also interesting about that is once she goes, you know, and is tortured by Vader, which we don't even really know that that's what happens with her. Like, obviously we see Han being tortured, but we don't see anything. We don't see anything with Leia. She just comes back. But now she's back in her white suit. And then at the end when we see her, she's in white again. So, like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? So I thought that that was very interesting with her in particular. I think that there's so much. I could sit here and talk about Leia for 5 hours. She just has so much going on in this movie. And specifically with, like, colors and the way that she presents herself and her relationship with Han. She's just such an in-depth character, and I think a lot of people don't give her credit for that.
Interesting. Very interesting. I never would have picked up on any of that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it makes sense, you know, when it's explained, of course.
Oh, and then I also had another point where you can see that Lando, once they step off the ship, he, you know, kisses Leia's hand, and she's obviously uncomfortable. And we see Han step up to the plate, and he's like, ew, gross. Well,
that's mine.
Yeah, and he, like, holds her hand, and he's like, right. All right, that's enough. So I think that that also shows the development of their bond just from leaving Hoth to arriving to Cloud City. So in this space that they're in, this spaceship together for however long, they, like, develop into this, like, they're actually willing to express their feelings for one another, which is just super interesting. And I think that that's why it's so important that they were sent together alone, you know, in that ship. Because they never would have developed otherwise. They right. probably would have stayed the same.
Mm-hmm. I always looked at it more as, with the whole Lando thing, of him basically them being so competitive, you know, you kind of get that feeling right off the bat,
right.
you know, when it's the whole, you know, oh, that's my ship. Well, I want it from you fair and square. And it says, right. oh, well, who was this? And, you know, he's just he's a womanizer. I mean, that's what they are. And it's like, once again, you know, hey, back off. That's mine. That's right. the way I look at it.
And I think that's interesting to compare him there to compare that the way that he is in Solo, because, like, obviously he's in love with that robot throughout that entire movie. So he doesn't really hit on Kira as much, so I think it's an interesting shift that they have that, you know, I don't know how long it's been at this point since Solo, but just the small bit of development that Lando has had off screen where he's kind of become a little bit more of a womanizer, and does that stem from, you know, just what he's doing now, or does it stem from that loss of L3? And, you know, what is going on with him character-wise. So I would like to see more of Lando in the future, I think. I think that they should bring back Donald Glover and do more. I think that he does a great job as Lando. And I think that we could get so much more Lando development.
Yeah, interesting. So there's more foreshadow that I picked up on with when Luke leaves... You know, backtrack just a slight bit. When Luke originally leaves Dagobah,
mm-hmm.
And Obi-Wan says to Yoda, you know, that boy's our last hope. And he says, no, there's another.
Right.
So that kind of gives you that what's going on kind of thing.
Right.
And that goes back to the whole, you know, they're setting up the Luke and Leia,
right.
you know, brother-sister thing. Because still at this point...
We don't know that.
Right. You do not find that out until Jedi...
Right, and it's pretty late in Jedi that you find out, right?
Yes.
Well, because Luke finds out significantly before Leia.
No, it's early in the movie.
Was because it? Because Leia finds out later.
It's when he goes back to see Yoda before he dies, and he says, you know, Leia's my sister. And then Leia finds out later. I don't remember...
Leia finds out because Luke basically heavily implies it. When they're standing on that bridge together and she's got her hair down and she's... It's when they're with the...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. With the Ewoks.
Yes, the yes. Ewoks.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, that's just that foreshadow. Also, going back to Boba Fett, they altered his voice in this movie.
Right.
The original Boba Fett, yeah, it was very machine-like. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to it now, you can see that it's... The guy that plays Boba Fett now. Right. I don't know what the actor's name is, but the guy, they put that voice in there, which is the voice that was Jango Fett. And, you know, it's the whole clone thing.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing that I also picked up. So moving more towards, you know, through Bespin, there, you know, they introduced the frozen carbonite.
Right.
Which, you know, becomes very popular in The Mandalorian.
Right.
It was funny because I thought that I had always seen a movie mistake. And I wrote it down thinking, oh man, I got this movie mistake down. And I watched it again. I was like, damn it, I was wrong. So when Han Solo's taken in to get carbonite, he's in shackles.
Right.
His hands are shackled. So the theory was when Luke is in or I'm sorry, when Han is in the carbonite, his hands are up, like up by his chest, like pushing away. And it was always a joke of, if his hands were shackled, how come they're up?
Right.
If you watch closer in the movie, Lando's little henchmen, the little short guys that look like pigs, I don't know what those species are, but they actually walk up to him before he goes in the carbonite and take his shackles off.
Right.
And then lower him down, and his hands are free to move. I think his arms are still tied to his sides, but he can move his elbows.
Right.
So I was like, darn it, I was wrong. So over the years, I have always thought that that was a movie mistake.
Right.
So now you have Luke and Vader's battle, and this is one of the
things. I
want
to go back for a second. Okay. I have a couple more things to say. So I want to talk about the I love you, I know scene. And I think that that's very interesting, and it says a lot about Han Solo as a person and as a character. So Leia finally, you know, building up this courage in their relationship to say, I love you, you know, this big step. And now I can think of two reasons that he says, I know. And is it because he's Han Solo and because he's arrogant? Oh, I love you. I know you love me. Who wouldn't love me? Or it's, hey, I'm about to die. Please don't make me, like, have feelings before I'm going to die and admit them, because that would suck for both of us. So I can't tell which it is. I think that it might be a little bit of both, to be honest with you, because we see Han become more of a human, but he still has, you know, his snarky little, you know, comments and stuff.
Like he matures, basically.
Right, basically. Like we see Leia and Han mature together throughout this film, and I think that's very interesting, and they did a lot of development with them that I can't get over it. I think that the way that they change from the beginning to the end is just crazy to me. So then after that, you know, they put him in the carbonite. You know, we talked about that. And now we have Luke, who is inside Cloud City trying to get to Han and Leia. And I never noticed this before, but when he's running through the hallway, there's this part where it sounds like they kind of just slam on the piano keys. It's very out of tune. It's very, like, startling. And it's just to induce, like, stress and anxiety within the audience, which I thought was very interesting and I had never picked up before. But it's to kind of throw you off and, you know, make you feel like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Why is it doing that? So I thought that was cool. And now we can talk about Luke and Vader because...
Okay, because this is like, like an awesome situation because this is like the key to this whole movie. But when they're having their battle... You can go back to episode one where, you know, Jedis are so fast and they're flipping around and they're so, you know, they're so smooth and everything. Mm-hmm. And you always wonder, why didn't Darth Vader go into full Jedi mode and just kill him? Mm-hmm. But it didn't occur to me until watching this the last time that whole battle with between the two of them, their lightsaber fight, was a Sith training situation.
Really?
If you think about that. Darth Vader is only on the defense. He's not really swinging, like, especially in the beginning. He's more just kind of defending himself. You know, Luke's giving it his all because, you know, I want to kill you because you're bad. And, you know, I don't really know who you are, but you're a bad guy. You got my friends. And Vader's just kind of sitting back, you know, oh, this is easy. And he's talking to him this whole time, you know. And he's trying to build up that hate. And then he starts with the, you know, Obi-Wan never told you who your real father was, right? And he said, you know, he told me enough. He told me you killed him. And then this is the classic thing. Darth Vader does not ever say, Luke, I am your father. This is such a misconception to anybody that doesn't know Star Wars. It is not Luke, I am your father. He says, no, I am your father. That is the line. It is not Luke, I am your father. So that's another interesting thing. And then the whole hand,
right,
which is very symbolic because leading up to that, you know,
literally disarmed him.
But, you know, going back to the Anakin's fight with Count Dooku when he gets his arm cut off. I mean, it's just, there's so many limbs getting cut off between them over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's more of that in Jedi when it's a reality check for him when he, you know, takes Vader's hand, and it's like, oh shit, you know, this is what happened to me. This is going to lead me to the dark side.
Right.
So anyway, so Luke gets his hand cut off, and you know, the lightsaber goes flying, and then that's the end of lightsaber until, you know, Force Awakens.
Right.
And so Luke falls in this big tube, and one of the funny things is he's falling down this tube, and then he just kind of gets sucked into one of these things right. for no known reason. So right. it's kind of odd. So now he's hanging out underneath Cloud City, you know, mm-hmm. the floor opens and he falls out.
Right.
And as they look down with the scene, and I pointed out to you, there's something's fallen. And it's always been told to me that that's his hand. It's just something just, you know, spinning and falling. You know, there goes the hand. But they never show the lightsaber. So nobody really knows
what actually happened
to the lightsaber. You just know it shows back up again in right. Force Awakens. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting, the Sith training, because right. you know that's what they want. They know right. that Luke is so powerful that we got to get him on the dark side here. Right. And the Emperor is basically telling him, you know, he is very powerful. You know, he's the son of Skywalker, and you know, you got to get him on our side. So right. it's a Sith training mission at that point. So
I would have never thought.
And I didn't want to talk to you about it until now because, you know, it was just so interesting.
Well, right, because the whole thing with the difference between a Jedi and the difference between a Sith is a Jedi will kill. And we see that specifically in Episode 3 when, you know, Anakin is so willing to kill all of these people. And even when he kills Count Dooku, he's like, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But then he goes on and he quote-unquote kills Samuel L. Jackson, and then we never see Obi-Wan kill anybody. He will not kill Anakin. And of course, you have all of these different, well, why, you know, he's such a great Jedi, he won't kill him, but, you know, he's also got his own feelings entangled in there. So you have to think, did he not kill him because it's not the Jedi way? Did he not kill him because he cares about him? And, but, you know, that's also interesting. And I wanted to talk about Luke's hand as well because you mentioned it. So I think the loss of Anakin's lightsaber is very symbolic because it's the moment where it separates Luke from his father. Now he knows who his father is, but he doesn't know who his father is until after he loses the lightsaber. So I think that he loses his father's lightsaber and in return, like, gains his father back in some, like, weird roundabout way. So that's weird and interesting, I think.
Well, and then even later in the same movie, it's interesting because so he falls and he tells him and he's very upset. You
right.
know, he's like, no, it can't be true. And he falls and then now he's on the ship and they're flying away and they're having the moment, the force moment or whatever you would call right. it, where Darth Vader is talking to him mm-hmm. and he hears him. So they're having this distant
thing. Right. And I think thing, that, that and he is kinda, a
when
force
he hears
giant.
Him call his name, he perks up and he says, Father. So even though he is mad that now Darth Vader's his father,
right.
he's perking up. He's like, wait, that's my father.
Right.
So it's still like, you know, he's still happy that he has his father. He knows who his father is.
Right.
But it's almost like right at that moment he feels, I'm going to turn this guy to the light side. But that could be, you know, pushing yeah. a little bit too far. But you can see how he perks up, you know, and you would think that, oh, man, he'd just be pissed off at the world. Man, my dad, who I've never known, is Darth Vader. But
right.
it's that feeling of, you right. know, perking up.
And that whole, you know, where he throws himself off of that pillar, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because he would rather die than join the dark side. And I think that should be the moment that you realize that, like, Luke is never going to the dark side. Like, never.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you want to say about his hand?
No, that was that pretty moment? Much... I don't really have much. I mean, that leads us up to
right.
the end of the movie anyway.
Well, I want to talk about Leia and Luke's force connection for a moment, because when he's, you know, dangling there, he's, you know, basically lost all hope at this point. You know, his dad's Darth Vader, he's hanging, who's gonna find him here in this weird place? He can't even get back up into it, it's closed. And then, you know, we see Leia and she has that look of like realization on her face. And she's like, I have to go back. Like, I have to go back and get Luke. And, you know, she knows exactly where he is. So then you have another moment of, you know, this foreshadowing with Leia as to like being either, you know, Force sensitive or his sister. So I don't know if initially audiences took away from that, because I've seen Star Wars so many times beginning when I was young. So I don't even remember if I initially picked up on that, you know what I mean? So I think that that's interesting. And I wonder if it had the impact then that it has now, if it made people wonder if they were like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's been so long. I don't know if I ever picked up that they were brother and sister until mm-hmm. it was basically pointed out right. in Jedi. I don't really remember that.
Yeah. Can't go back to scour the depths of the internet to see what people knew either.
Yeah.
And then that also, we have, because Leia has her own score, if you notice. It's the Star Wars, you know, music, but it's like very woodwindy, it's very light, it's very feminine. And the initial point that made me realize that that was what happened, you know, context and everything given, was them playing her theme. So it's Leia, but it's Star Wars. So you're thinking, okay, well, that's what she's doing. It's the Force. The Force is telling her. So I thought that that was also interesting. And then we end, you know, they fix Luke's hand. And we see that Leia's back in her signature white dress. And Luke is back in the sand colors from Tatooine. So I thought that that was really interesting. And so it's almost to like, it makes me think of episode 3 when they separated them. But now they, you know, have found each other again. They just don't realize that they found each other. Because, you know, they sent Leia to this like diplomatic society and they sent Luke back to the sand planet. So I thought that that was very interesting. I'm not totally sure what it means in terms of like them together. But, like, being back in those colors that they started in, I thought was really interesting. Because, you know, in the next movie, we have such a different Luke, where now he's fully in black and Leia's in, you know, her slave garb. So I think it just kind of wraps, like, those two movies up together with a little bow, you know? That's it.
Well said. I think, you know, getting past the Luke and Leia situation, but, you know, the end of the movie where Lando finally gets the Millennium Falcon back
right.
is a very powerful scene. Once again, once you've seen Solo, you feel it's, I don't know, it's surreal that it's that connection that you have between those two movies.
Right.
And they start talking about the rendezvous point and all this stuff. They're mm-hmm. going to, you know, we're going to go rescue Han from that bounty hunter. But it's different than episode 4, where episode 4 just kind of ended. And right. this one ended on a cliffhanger.
Right.
You know, it ended, but it ended where, okay, you got it. You know, there's more to the story.
Right.
So you can know, you know, at this point back in 1980, they were planning right. to do this next movie.
Yes.
Where, you know, episode 4 had the ending. They blew up the Death Star. They had the ceremony, and it was like, bump, okay, it's over. No, right. nothing else to really talk about. And then you kind of jump into episode 5. So I'm always wondered what's the story between those two movies. They could probably slide something in there, which would be kind of neat,
right?
Because obviously there's a lot that went on in there. And like I said, there was a book that took place between Jedi or Empire and Jedi, where it was like this whole hunt to figure out where Han is, and then that's how Leia gets her bounty hunter suit. That's what she was dressed at right. when she goes to Jabba's palace. But that book is no longer canon, so it was still a good story.
Right.
But
yeah, Disney took everything away from us.
But I think I covered everything on my list here.
I covered the important stuff, you know.
So it's a little bit longer than we wanted it to be.
But
But, you know, you sit us down and you want to talk about Star Wars, we could talk about Star Wars all night.
Yeah, I'm sure we're gonna continue this conversation once we
Right.
log off.
And I'm sure that we'll do another Star Wars movie at some point. I'm
I'm
sure
sure.
at some point we'll do all of them, but just the way we are. So next week we're going to be doing Guardians of the Galaxy,
Yes.
which is another one that's on my movie poster.
Right.
So if we're not doing anything else here, we're going to be knocking some scratch-offs off the poster because I
Right.
still have a lot to go through. A lot of them I haven't seen, but you know, most of them I feel I have seen. So Guardians of the Galaxy next week. We hope we didn't bore you. I know it's
Right.
been an hour and a half at this point, but
Right.
we had a good time. I mean, I had a good time.
Right. So next week, if you want to watch along, you can watch Guardians of the Galaxy on Disney Plus. It's a 2-hour and 5-minute runtime, directed by James Gunn. Which, did you know that James Gunn also wrote the live action Scooby-Doo movie?
The original one with Freddie
Yes.
Prinze Jr.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I found that out. So, all right, but I think that's all for this week.
And make sure you share on our Facebook page and or Instagram.
Yes, we're on Instagram now. It's at Film Frenzy Podcast. Right now we're on Spotify and we're on Anchor. I think right now we're in the process of getting on Apple Podcasts, but there's a process where they have to go in and listen and all that stuff. So hopefully it'll be up soon. We'll keep you posted and updated. Keep an eye on our Facebook and Instagram for more information.
And I want to just throw out a thank you to all 28 of our followers. It's super exciting. We're hoping that we can at least double that by next week.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. It's just fun. It's just something fun to do, and especially see people's comments about what they think of the show.
Yeah.
And if you have any suggestions, you know, throw them out there. Or you know, if we bored you, tell us.
Tell us.
You know, we want any feedback you guys got.
Yell
So
at us for
let
our
us
bad
know.
Star Wars opinions.
So until next week.
Till next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.